Welcome back to Following Noadon, a Stormlight podcast. This week is episode 195, and we are entering Shadows of Self by Brandon Sanderson, book two of Mistborn Era 2. Elliot, how are you?
I'm doing great. Another journey, another story awaits. It's already been good so far.
Paul, how are you? You've got a name on your wall.
I'm doing good, Trevor. Oh, I almost forgot about this. Can't believe you noticed it.
Wow.
So we have, I'll go ahead and introduce, we have a patron this week, and I kind of wanted to kick things up a notch instead of a measly place on my cap this week. I've enlisted you to the wall. So Jared, I hope you like your name out there, because I've put you up on the wall for me and us to see. So yeah, if you're listening on Spotify, Jared is our newest supporter, and actually Jared is a Knight Radiant, so he's kind of better than all of us, which puts me to shame a bit. Because I am not actually Knight Radiant. However, I dream to one day be a Knight Radiant. So we're very grateful for the support, in all seriousness, jokes aside. And so I figured, if you're a Knight Radiant, I guess you deserve a little publicity. So I figured I'd just put you up here. Hope that's all right. Thank you.
Thank you, Jared. We appreciate your support.
Thank you.
All righty. Let's roll intro shortly, and then I'm going to keep the mic because I have a quote to read before we get into chapter summaries, which will be Elliot-led. So let's roll intro. All right, Elliot, do you remember in Mistborn Era 1, there is a random quote by some random dude who's not even named that says, "Shadow of Self." Do you remember this? Somebody just vaguely mentions the term "Shadow of Self."
They do. I want to say it was like a Chondra.
You would be correct. Do you remember any other context with it?
No, I wrote it down in my notes. I could go dig it up because I did know the name of this book as we were reading. Right. And so it did jump out to me. But even taking a few seconds to stare at it to try and deduce some kind of a context, I didn't come up with anything. It was like, that's a reference to a future book that I have no idea what it means.
All right. Well, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to stare at the same quote and see if we can deduce anything with a little bit of more knowledge than we have now. This is the scene is Sazed has finally appealed to the first generation of Chondra. And there's some dialogue back and forth of like the main first generation guy who knows everything and the other first generation guys who are Chondra who know more as well. "That is impossible," Haddock said. "Preservation's power remains, for power cannot be destroyed. His mind, however, was all but destroyed, for this was the sacrifice he made to imprison ruin. The sliver remains," another reminded, "the shadow of self." "Yes," Haddock said, "but that is not preservation, just an image, a remnant. Now that ruin has escaped, I think we can assume that even it has been destroyed." Gather anything from that?
Isn't that statement at the end just incorrect? Because maybe I'm thinking about the wrong terms. Are they talking about the shard preservation itself versus like the person wielding the shard, and they're saying, "Oh, ruins escape, so the sliver itself may even be dead"? Or am I mixing all my terms?
You may be mixing your terms, but I think you are correct that the Chondra are making an incorrect assumption. But the reason why I'm reading this and bringing this back up is because I wanted to equate the shadow of self, as the Chandra referred to it, to a sliver. What do you guys know about a sliver?
Is a sliver like a splintering of a splintered shard or something like that? I feel like we've heard the term sliver, at least to my memory, as of like a piece of a shard. I could be wrong.
Sure. From my understanding, a sliver is just a notable portion of a shard. So, for example, the Lord Ruler was a sliver of preservation because he had quite a bit of power of preservation. So, it, from my understanding, it's just somebody who has a significant amount of investiture from a direct shard would be called a sliver. Does that make sense?
Since we're open spoilers here to Stormlight, and I'm trying to piece together my greater Cosmere elements into a larger knowledge base, is something like the Stormfather on Roshar a sliver, or is that a different category?
I would use that term. It's probably incorrect, but I think the mindset is not. I think you are successfully understanding the concept of sliver, even though I think technically that Stormfather would not be a sliver. Does that make sense?
I think so.
I think the category is correct. The specific name is not. Anyway, with all that in mind, Elliot, do you want to go for a chapter summary for the prologue through chapter 4 of Shadows of Self?
Let's do it. So the entirety of part 1, actually, of Shadows of Self, all the way through chapter 4, starts with the prologue, where we go back in time from anything we've seen yet, I think, to Wax meeting Lessie for the first time. And it's a much more inexperienced Wax, who's not quite the super awesome superhero that he is nowadays. He's a little more bumbling. Lessie apparently worked for the bad guy during that period of time. So a few reveals, but I didn't take anything major out of the prologue, which tells me I probably missed something. But chapter 1 jumps right into the meat of Shadows of Self, and we get a scene, a rather violent scene ultimately, where we pick it up with the governor of Elendel's brother, Winsting.
Correct.
He's having a get together of all the crime lords and corrupt nobles of the city to like auction off his vote or something like that in the Senate or Congress or something corrupt to that effect. And a mysterious someone shows up and murders all of them.
Yep.
And that's chapter 1. Chapter 2 is back with our heroes. We've got Wax and Steris and Wayne and Mercy, the whole crew. They are trying to chase down what's the name of the organization of like crime lords they're trying to chase after that his uncle is with? The Set?
Oh, the Set. Thank you.
Yeah. Trying to get more information about the Set, but they're also kind of chasing down other more minor villains at the same time. So kind of mid chapter here, Wax drops everything to go jump in a car with Wayne and Mercy and chase down a villain, which they do. They track him down. Wayne uses some rather impressive skills to snatch him out of the slums where he is hiding. An assassin shows up and kills that bad guy that they nab before he can talk. And then Mercy returns the favor and kills the assassin. Chapter 4, our heroes end up at the crime scene of the chapter 1, where all the crime lords and corrupt nobles get murdered. And now we kind of pick up what's, I'm assuming, going to be our main plot point, which is trying to chase down, okay, who is capable of this level of taking out lots of powerful people and who done it. And I think that hits the high points of part 1.
Very well done, Elliot. Paul, which one do you want to talk about first?
I think we should talk about... you're going to make fun of me because I'm blanking on the name already. Lessie. I can't believe I forgot. I think we should talk about Lessie.
Yeah.
Because I think it's interesting that... I was almost a little bit mixed up in the timeline whenever I was thrown into it and he meets Lessie. Obviously, I know that this is like in the past, and then it becomes pretty clear pretty quick that this is like, you know, an old moment with Lessie of them, you know, I wouldn't say they're really falling in love here, but kind of sort of, you know, it's the start of a, I guess, an acquaintanceship or friendship, you know, of some sort. And it's interesting. And while I thought it was neat, I was kind of like, well, I know how this ends. So Brandon, why are you tormenting me? Was more so my thought, I think, with this. Don't make it too sappy and sweet where I'm now sad about it, you know? So, yeah, I thought it was interesting that Lessie is in here, but I guess that's the story that we're going to see, the backstory for Wax. I guess that's kind of his notable moment in his past.
The question you're asking is a good one. What we already know what happens to Lessie from the prologue of the previous book. So why are we then reintroduced at a even further back timeline? I feel like the prologue should be, you know, swapped, right? Where maybe we're introduced to Lessie in the first book, and then we find out that she doesn't, we find out her mysterious lack of involvement in the first book because she doesn't make it there. But why are we getting reintroduced to Lessie if she's dead and we know she's dead? I mean, I guess you could ask the same on Stormlight with Gavilar, but oh well. Elliot, what do you think?
As I kind of mentioned in my intro, I'm now very suspicious because I didn't take anything notable out of the prologue other than a rather interesting further in the back story about Lessie, and we get it entertaining the two of them trying to get out of this saloon that they're getting trapped in and attacked by all the bad guys all at once. But if I know Brandon, I know it's that prologues always have little nuggets in them. They are kind of some of the interconnectedness amongst series and books and things like that. So where's the bit? Where's the bit that I missed in here that's going to be the huge revelation later?
So I think you're right, Elliot. I think there probably will be something that we'll look back on and say, wow, you know, can't believe this was there and we, you know, saw it the whole time or something like that. But my understanding of why this is here, why we're seeing Lessie overall, is that is going to be the prime point of what we will need to understand, all the things that happened with Wax, to understand struggles he's feeling, like, you know, his emotions, his, you know, any conflicting emotions that he has going forward, in relationships or just whatever, I imagine will be, you know, it'll be important to know his past with Lessie. I do feel like when this, something similar to this happens in another story of Brandon Sanderson's, it's like the big reveal. It's like the flashback where you see this happen. Like you know that there's allusions to some jaded moment in our character's past, but here it's not like, oh, it's hinted at, and you find out this big reveal later. It's just smacked down right in front of you from the get-go, and you're like, okay, well, now I have to carry this emotional baggage too through the story. I don't know. Tough. So, yeah.
It's a big shift. So, Elliot, you mentioned that there's hidden nuggets in Sanderson's books. I'm not going to overtly spoil this. However, I'm going to read an excerpt, and I will tell you there is something in here, and if you guys can pick it up and want to talk about it, you can. If not, we'll move on. So it's up to you guys. This is from the prologue. "Holy hell," Lessie said as they reached the first landing. "We're alive." She looked back at him, her cheeks flushed. Something clicked, like a lock in Maxilima's mind. "I have met you before," he said. "No, you haven't," she said, looking away. "Let's keep..." "The Weeping Bull," Waxillium said. "The Dancing Girl." "Oh, God beyond," she said, leading the way up the stairs. "You remember. I knew you were faking. Even Rusko wouldn't hire someone that uncoordinated, no matter how pretty her legs are." Did you catch anything there?
So Wax knew Lessie from before this? So what?
True, but that's not the nugget.
I don't know, but my guess is that whoever this Resco is or whoever is someone important, maybe. It's my guess.
Or having pretty legs makes you a ferrochemist of some kind?
That could be it. You have to store it up. You have to spend days with really hideous legs.
Yeah.
In order to have really beautiful legs for...
Bingo.
You know.
You have to store...
We've cracked the magic system on this one.
You got it.
Time to move on to the next.
Yeah. All right. If you guys didn't garner anything else from that, we can move on. That's okay. I'm a little disappointed. You guys should have got that one.
I'm disappointed, and I still don't get it.
We'll think on it.
All right, fine. I'm. This is going to bug me. I'm going to reveal this just as a. I can't handle this.
Wow.
Trevor,
you lowered your standards.
I know. That's what I was about to say. Back at the beginning of this podcast, I used to sit through this type of thing all the time, and my tolerance for it is zero now. Like, I cannot do this anymore. Gentlemen, in Sanderson books, what tells you more about someone than the swear words they use?
Oh.
In the middle of Oathbringer, we have... What's her name?
Vivenna?
Yes, Vivenna. Using red and rusts and all sorts of like color terms as her swear words.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the swear words. What is she saying?
I don't remember what the swear words were. You'll have to read it again. I'm sorry.
Ellie, do you see it?
Ellie, I'll let Elliot pick it up for me.
I'm really lucky at flipping to places that you read, by the way. That should have taken me longer. I flipped right to it.
I did the same thing. I flipped right to it.
She says, "Holy hell." And then later she says, "God beyond." Is there another one here? I think that's kind of it, right?
Is she from the forests of the nightmare, you know, that one,
the Forest of Hell, Threnody?
Yes, that one.
Perhaps. Now we're cooking. Okay, so.
So does that mean she's going to like use silver or something, or aluminum or whatever they did there? And it's been a minute.
It has been a minute. I won't answer anything overtly, but guys, you got to pay attention to the expletives because that's how you track people in the Cosmere. You got to keep track of their expletives.
Well, that's fair. Those ones I will say are like more. It's not like storms, you know, like it
right
feels much less blatant.
But the fact that she's not using rust and ruin like everyone else does, right? That's what you're supposed to key into.
Okay, that does make sense. I do. I'm picking up what you're putting down now.
So, with that in mind.
So she's just, is she from Earth?
Oh yeah,
she used normal ones? Oh gosh, oh heck, you know?
Yeah, oh darn it. No, yeah. Unfortunately
Dad has gum.
Been confirmed that Earth is not in the Cosmere. That has been asked by Mr. Sanderson.
Okay.
All right. Did you guys get anything from the first chapter? I mean, the first chapter by itself doesn't really reveal too much besides there's a crime underbelly of the city, which we already knew. And then chapters 2 and chapter 3, we're just catching back up with Mara Seawax and Wayne. And then chapter four is really when we, Elliot, like you said in your chapter summary, where we're kicking off what we assume to be the plot of this book, where who is taking out all these crime lords and what for. That's our detective story for the book. So let's talk plot. Go ahead, Paul.
I was going to say one thing that I want to say about it all, kind of what you're talking about. We just read the first book, which was kind of a little standalone story almost. It was like a single book, like from start to finish, it was kind of its own story. I know there's, you know, we get a lot in there, but, you know, it's kind of its own thing. This one has already started to feel different. It feels like it's setting up our characters for maybe a longer story arc. I feel like our characters were starting to already see, you know, kind of that sentiment of what we're used to with like a 3-book, 5-book series where we have a lot more character development, a lot more moments and behind the scenes things and flashbacks and things like that. And so I think it's a neat way that we're starting to set up. And it's interesting. This is unless you count novellas in Stormlight, which is, you probably could count it. It's similar. It feels like this is the first time we're getting that, where it's like we're coming into a longer story arc. I'm to my understanding, but we already have a good picture of a lot of these characters in general, kind of a standard bird's eye view, wine and cheese knowledge, you know. So I think it's kind of interesting, a unique perspective we kind of have starting this story.
Yeah, I think that's actually kind of cool that now we know that we're like really kicking off a trilogy, but we already know our base characters. We don't have to like spend parts one and two, like, you know, getting to know the characters like you normally would in a Stormlight book or, you know, another series. So, I also think that's pretty cool that we can just get going real quick with what we're going to tackle in this book.
Yeah, we're able to dive into some meat and potatoes, I feel like, since we know our characters. I also want to say, maybe I'm talking about this too much, but the last thought I have is, I'm glad it's this way. I feel like you could have, an author could have like a book or a series that they write, and then it goes really well, and then they kind of wanted to add on to it, so they write another book. I'm glad we kind of have the one standalone book, and then like a bigger trilogy, if you will, to kind of follow it up, because the first book was great. I have a clear picture of the environment and the things going on, and then now I get to just like go on a more, I guess, immersive, a more full story. So I'm kind of just excited along for the ride. We'll see where it goes, you know. Very open, I guess. So anyways,
Elliot, last book introduced trains to not only the Cosmere, but Scadrial specifically. This book, what do we get?
We get them charging out and jumping in an automobile. And I use that term because it definitely has a very like 1920s feel. Good old Model T. These kind of introductory... Yeah. I don't even know if, I think they even talk about this. They're like running on gasoline, and that's a crazy innovation that, oh, we moved right on from steam cars to gasoline cars. Oh man.
Yeah. I think that firmly nabs us quite right in the 1920s feel, which is pretty fun. Do we get any weird engineering in this episode? Do we get treated to an engineering lesson?
No engineering, but some musings, some ponderings on physics. There's a few sections, and Paul, you actually keyed in on this on some of your live reactions in our Discord, where we post some of our early thoughts as we're going. You're mentioning that Sanderson throws out some nuggets to the physics nerds out there by talking about gravity and air resistance and things like that. And I got my head was scratching a little bit on some of it, because I think what happens in the chapter, I think this is in chapter two, he's like, he's wax, right? He's flying through the air. He increases his mass in order to like travel faster through the air or something to that effect. It's like he's reducing his wind resistance by increasing his mass with his ferrochemie so that he like pushes through the air quicker. I have to go back and read the exact description.
Okay. Yeah, I think you're right.
When I read that, I immediately went, I've done some research on this. Probably a good hour total of Google searching and reading various different things. And I'm not sure whether that's correct by Earth physics or not. Now, this is schedule physics, so could be completely different. And I am by no means, you know, about to claim any kind of a plot hole or anything like that. It's a fantasy world. It would probably should be different. But with Earth physics, air resistance itself is really just dependent on shape and how fast you're moving. So your mass doesn't increase your air resistance, but mass does affect other things like terminal velocity and buoyancy and things like that. So when you're moving through a fluid like air, increasing your mass might have a small effect on that. I can't tell. It doesn't decrease your air resistance, but it still might help you move through the air slightly faster. I'm really not sure. I actually did a fair amount of reading on this and I'm still not quite sure.
Let me ask you a question. So the way I equate this is a sailboat. If you have a sail that is lighter weight, would that not push you faster than a sail that is heavier weight?
It's all about surface area.
Sure. But if your sail is like heavy and rigid and thick, it's not gonna push you as good as a light like furled sail, right?
I could be wrong. I don't think it has anything to do with the weight of like the boat itself of what you're propelling. Okay. I'll let Elliot answer this, but that's my understanding is like the weight of it may have an impact, but the sail, I mean, I guess maybe the fabric would have it, but as long as it's, you know, solid and it's not going to blow straight through it like a net, I don't think the weight of the sail would matter too much as long as it catches the wind.
I don't think it would matter for how much wind you catch. That's just determined by your shape. But a heavier sail means a heavier boat, which means it's going to move slower through the waters because you're trying to push more boat through more water because you're sinking lower, like those kinds of things.
Sure. But
purely air resistance is just your shape and how fast you're moving. You move faster, you push against more air. So,
okay. So I guess I asked the question incorrectly. Let's change it to a parachute then, a little bit more applicable here. If you have a lighter, well, no, that's not true either. If you have like a light, like canopy parachute and then make it heavier, will that not then fall faster because it's...
You have to be careful how you use your terms. So,
right. If you increase the mass...
Think of like, yeah, so a fabric parachute versus, let's go extreme, like a concrete parachute.
Right.
If it's the same shape, you're going to catch the same amount of air. So your air resistance is going to be the same. But if you're heavier, you're going to have a higher terminal velocity, which means you're going to accelerate at the same speed. So if you drop the two objects, they're going to fall at the same rate because they accelerate the same. But the heavier concrete parachute has a much higher terminal velocity because there's more mass there. So eventually your fabric parachute hits terminal velocity, which is exactly what you're trying to do with a parachute, is hit terminal velocity at a really low speed. So you move slowly. Whereas the concrete they'll accelerate the same, but eventually the concrete will go faster because it can get to a higher terminal velocity. So technically I think wax can do the same thing. He can make himself heavier, which increases his maximum terminal velocity.
Okay.
But yeah, he's flying sideways, so it's not really gravity related. It's complex. I don't know whether this is accurate via Earth physics or not.
Okay. Yeah. So my mental picture is just, it's less about drag and more about increasing terminal velocity. And that's why you would be going faster if you're heavier. So I guess that does make sense in my brain. I'm not sure if that's super applicable to wax, like you were saying, but maybe it is.
It I think it falls firmly in the category of I'm going to go with it. I'm going to go with what Sanderson's got going, whether it works with Earth physics or not. It might. I don't know, but this isn't Earth anyway, so we go with it.
All right. Completely changing directions. There seems to be, Elliot, you mentioned this, I think, in our last episode, maybe a love triangle forming. That at the end of last book, Wax makes the conscious decision to move forward with the engagement with Steris. He rescues Steris. She's all grateful. And they move forward with their engagement. But throughout last book, it was kind of hinted, and there were a couple scenes where it was talked about directly, where Marcy was beginning to catch some feelings for Wax, and Wax was like, I'd be bad for her. I should stay away from her because she's innocent and a young kid of, you know, 23 or whatever she is, 25, and he's like just hit 40, I believe. So where do you guys think that this is going? Prediction time. Do you think this is a full-blown love triangle between two half-sisters and Wax, or do you think something else is going to happen, or what? Where do you think this is going?
I mean, the safe answer for me is it's too early to tell, but I should make a bold prediction either way to be more fun. I think we'll kind of play with the love triangle trope for a while, but I don't think it's going to be long term. I don't think we're going to be like a book and a half from now and be worried about that, is my guess.
I think I might predict the exact opposite. I think we might be in for a bit of a slow burn, that this is going to be a kind of in the background thing for maybe a while, and that the Wax Steris marriage doesn't happen till book four here, or like, does it happen? Does Wax spend a lot more time with Marcy during the stories and starts to build more of like a friendship connection there, which blossoms into romance? And then now we've got a dilemma because he's engaged to Steris, but he actually has more fun hanging out with Marcy. I wonder if that might actually be a backdrop to this for like the next two books.
I mean, Sanderson's doing some deliberate page time with Marcy for the reader and not Steris. So we're seeing way more Marcy in this previous book and this book so far. And Steris has been in what? Four scenes total? Like she's in four chapters and she's kind of
been
awkward and weird.
Which I've been a little bit surprised by. I thought we were going to see a pivot, that book one was going to be kind of Marcy focus, and then book two was going to get full into, okay, now you get to learn about Steris. It's still about Marcy and Wax and Wayne, and Steris is still a side character so far, at least.
Alrighty. Big name drop for this episode. Although, full disclosure, we've read for next week and know where this goes. But as Wax is jumping through the city after the marksman, I think, is the guy that they're chasing the first couple books, or chapters, I should say. He's, as he's like running through the crowd or jumping through the crowd, he sees out of the corner of his eye Bloody Tan, who I've quoted already multiple times on this podcast. What's his famous line, gentlemen, from last book?
Is it the, like, I've seen Iron Eyes?
Yep. Or...
And he says, I've seen Iron Eyes and something.
I've seen Iron Eyes. I've seen Death. and his final words are, "Someone else moves us, Lawman." And then Wax shoots him in the face.
That's right.
And now he's back, or maybe. And Wax sees his face out of the corner of his eye as he's chasing the marksman. And then that's kind of all we get. And we continue to go capture the marksman, as, and then he gets assassinated. And then in one of the most, one of the most like openly gruesome scenes in the Cosmere, where Mercy is being held hostage, pulls her little like one shot pistol out of her purse and, quote, blows the bottom of his head out through the top. What an epic descriptor line. I was like, oh wow, okay. And then like the entire next chapter, she's like peeling bits of blood off her dress. Like, gee, we get quite the descriptions here.
And at this point, I was ready to chalk up this bloody tan sighting to Wax being a little bit, I don't know quite what the right term is, hallucinatory. I don't know. There's a better word than that. But Wax carries around baggage. He's scarred by stuff that's happened in his past, Lessie most of all. So for Wax to see a face in a crowd that gives him some PTSD doesn't immediately scream to me that that person's actually there. So I was very ready to say, oh, this is Wax just reliving some of his past terrible events in his life. But as you said, we've read a little further than this, and I'll save for next episode. Apparently this might be actual bloody tan in the crowd.
Any thoughts, Paul?
I think this is definitely bloody tan.
Okay. How do you live? I think that's a funny question because there are multiple answers. You could come up with multiple ways you could survive getting shot in the face in Scadrial.
That's true. That's true. We had the whole Miles thing last book, which, you know, I don't think it's that, though. I think it is, I mean, Shadows of Self, we're talking about this whole Splinter, was it Splinter?
Sliver, whatever, is the technical
sliver,
term.
This whole sliver thing, I think it could very well be investment. I think it could be Bloody Tan is invested, a cognitive shadow or something along those lines. I feel like I always think of our cognitive shadows as being good guys, you know? But I think there's no reason that he couldn't be, you know? So I think it's something along those lines where he, you know, maybe he's dead, but he's not really dead. You know, we've talked about how rocky that gets of people actually dying in Cosmere books. So I think it's something along those lines. Or whoever this is, my only other prediction, which I just thought of, is, you know, there's this whole, you know, he says, "Someone else moves us, Lawman." Whoever that someone else is maybe not, you know, using actually him as a puppet, but like, you know, creating this, you know, I don't know. I don't think, this doesn't seem like something Harmony would do, but hypothetically, I feel like he could create an illusion of Bloody Tan to play a part in the story, you know?
To get Wax's attention.
Yeah, exactly.
Seems it's like not a very nice way to do it.
I agree, but that's very Ruin-esque from our previous series, so
okay.
I could fully believe it. So
the actual chase with the marksman, did you guys get anything besides cool action sequence in Mistborn Era 2? I mean, they're, I always want to say swinging, but that's not technically correct, but that's just how I envision it, is like a Spider-Man swing through the city. But it's more like leaping.
Bouncing. Or,
yeah, like soaring would be a better arcing through the city. Did you guys get anything as he's chasing this other coin shot and then he gets assassinated? So I actually have something. as Wax is chasing him, we get an internal dialogue from Wax that he thinks that the marksman is tied to the set. Elliot, you mentioned the set earlier and how Wax is still trying to figure out, like, it's kind of on the back burner at this point, but Wax is really trying to figure out what his uncle is up to. We got the uncle reveal at the end of last book that he seems to be having much more going on behind the scenes besides just Miles' 100 lives. So, and those, what, 4 or 5 other women that were kidnapped are still missing. The uncle's likely behind it. So we have that whole other strand from last book. And Wax says that the marksman here is tied to the set. And then right as they capture him, Wayne actually goes on this little side quest to capture him as Wax and Maracy are trying to intimidate some beggar boys. And then he gets shot in the head with a crossbow bolt from an assassin, so to presumably not leak any information that he might have. So there's, on top of the crime assassination spree that we had in chapter 1 and chapter 4, there's also this other thread that we've gotten from last book of Wax's uncle and the sets and what's going on with that. Are they connected? The crime lords of Ellendale and Wax's uncle?
I mean, the answer's got to be yes. Now, how are they connected? That's the nuance we got to chase down. It's clear from last time that what did Miles call him? Mr. Suit or something like that?
Mr. Suit, yes.
Something silly. Mr. Suit is clearly a crime lord of some kind, but is he like controlling everything and it all trees up to him, or is he kind of more Ghost Blood style, more on the side doing his own thing while the crime lords are kind of doing theirs? That's I think what we got to figure out.
I agree with Elliot on this one. I think there's definitely going to be a relevant connection. I do not know what it may be. No idea.
I'm actually going to answer my own question. I think we do have enough evidence to link them together, because at the very in chapter 1, the governor's brother, what's his name? What, Winsting? He's off put because Edwarn Ladrian is not there at the party. He's the guest list, and he's upset that he's not there. And at the end of chapter 4, Wax warns the chief of police guy, get ready for a storm, because this was not done quietly. Like, this was a big deal, and this was an announcement, basically. And he tells him, check the guest list to see if there's any bodies that should be here and are not. So I think Wax's uncle's name is going to come up really, really quickly in link to this. So I think the answer is yes, I think. Anything else?
I wanted to say, you mentioned the fun action scenes. I think the funnest part of these set of chapters for me was when Wayne really gets in his element.
Yeah.
They're chasing the marksman or whatever his name is. And he goes to ground in the slums, and they're worried about that. At least Wax is. He's like, man, people in there aren't going to turn him over easily. So I can't just kind of go door to door and figure out where he's at. But as soon as they enter into the slums, Wayne just kind of drops off. He like sneaks off to the side, leaves Wax and Maracy to blunder around with their own methods. But Wayne just like slowly, I can picture the montage scene where he like snatches trades. It's Wayne, right? So he trades. Makes trades.
He is not a kleptomaniac. He is trading.
Nope.
Correct.
He's not steal things. He trades. Trades for a hat, trades for a jacket, trades an accent. Like, he's just slipping on this personality bit by bit into the perfect like undercover spy, I guess you'd call it. I don't even know what you call it. And he perfectly infiltrates the society of the slums and gathers information off people without them even realizing that they've given him things. He talks about the marksman guy, doesn't try to get them to turn him over, but then follows the guy straight to where the marksman is, and then uses his speed bubble power to snatch the guy through a window, back out the window, before the people he's having a conversation with even realize what's happened, and makes off with the guy like unconscious over his shoulder, and just like walks up to Wax and Marcy, who, like you said, are trying to like desperately try and get information out of the beggar kids and completely failing. And Wax is like, all right, got him. Let's go. And I thought it was fantastic. It was Wayne in his element.
Yeah, I agree. I do think the window snatching scene specifically is pretty funny. Like, you're trying to tend the wounds of this guy that just got shot by Wax, and he just disappears out the window in front of you. I did forget to mention the thing I was most excited to talk about in this episode. Do you guys remember how chapter 2 opens?
Well, he's reading a book, right? Wax is reading a book?
Wax is reading the book that was given to him by Iron Eyes in the epilogue of the last book. And this is how chapter 2 opens. I figure I should write one of these things, the small book read, to tell my side, not the side the historians will tell for me. I doubt they'll get it right. I don't know that I'd like them to anyhow. I know Says doesn't approve of what I've done, the book continued, but what did he expect me to do, knowing what I know? I couldn't let it lie. It's not right. Hemallergy is good now, I figure. Says is both sides now, right? Ruin isn't around anymore. We can use it. We should, shouldn't we? I think there's one more excerpt, but I think that's most of it. What do you guys think of that?
So it's, I think, revealed. I think it's revealed here. Yeah, it's Spook, right? Is the perspective that we're reading?
Yes. Spook after the Catasandra is
right. Right. And my, what I was trying to piece together is he going to be talking in this book about events we already know about from Mistborn Era 1? You know, I'm going to retell the story from my perspective. Are we going to get his side of things back from Mistborn Era 1? Based on what you just read, I don't think so. I think it's going to be something future that we haven't seen yet, because he talks about Sazed and Harmony and all this. So I think we can maybe expect Spook to have done something probably related to hemallergy, like you were, that seems to reference there, that Seiza does not approve of, but Spook thinks is fine.
Yeah. What? Whose judgment would you trust better, guys? Seiza or post-ascension Seiza or post-Mistborn Spook? It's an interesting question.
That's a fascinating question, actually, because Era 1 Seiza versus Spook, like Seiza every time.
Right.
But Spook has a renaissance, right? He is faced with tough decisions, and he makes a good choice. Spook has a redemption, a really powerful one, in the Hero of Ages. And Sazed, while he's a great guy, I trust Sazed quite a bit, he also now carries the Shard of Ruin.
Yes, who he does.
We've seen do some really nasty things. And so, like, do I trust post-ascension Sazed? I want to. I want to.
This is certainly the hardest question of this. I think I'm going to be asking this whole series, honestly. I mean, my gut definitely says to have to trust Sazed, but you're right. Like, the power of these shards is, you know, not to be trifled with, I suppose. And I don't know.
I think. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know what to think.
I do think it's a very interesting question, because Elliot, like you said, at the beginning of book 3 of Mistborn Era 1, you would absolutely go with Sazed every time. But by the end of book three, Sazed's a great guy, but the two shards he's holding, and what is that going to do to him? That's a very interesting question. Just as an aside, I want to say I'm a little disappointed in Brandon Sanderson. That book that Spook is writing would have been a perfect little epigraph thing in our book. Like, I want to know more excerpts of that book. That was the perfect opportunity to put epigraphs in Mistborn, and you have not. I want to read more of Spook's book, but I don't get to. Really, it's not in epigraphs.
I do love the commitment to these in-world books, and the in-world books themselves being really good.
Anything else before we get to a Stormlight refresher, gentlemen?
Nah, I think we've set the scene well for Mistborn, Era 2, Book 2. Let's go.
I think the last thing I'll say is one of the last things that's said in Chapter 4, the chapter we end on, is they assume that the killer at the party is a steel runner who stores up speed in a ferrochemy mind, because the only other solution they can come up with is the way the bodies died and stuff like that is, well, it's either a steel runner or somebody is shooting out of speed bubbles, which, Elliot, you mentioned last book was a convenient little plot hole plug that probably some alpha reader pointed out. But I just think that's funny that if there is a good explanation of why you can't shoot out of speed bubbles, and if they can figure that out, then that could be an interesting little plot point for a nice little level up for Wayne and his abilities, although he'd have to learn how to shoot again because he's got some PTSD with that. Alrighty. That will conclude this week. Next week, we'll be doing chapters 5 through 7. Let's get into a Stormlight review. Gentlemen, the votes have been cast from last week. Actually, the week before. There was a hotly contested topic of whether Paul should receive the points for, quote, the King's Jewel was his answer, and the correct answer was the King's Drop. The votes are Paul does not get the point, and it goes to Elliot. So the current score going into this week is 8-5 in Elliot's favor. Paul, you're going to lead this. Your first question is a chapter name. I'm going to give you the name of the chapter. You need to tell me a brief summary, as vaguely or as specific as you would like to be, on what happened in the chapter. Your chapter name is Vire.
Vire. This is the chapter where Moash becomes Vire, in Rhythm of War, where he, I would say he's kind of like anointed to become Vire and no longer feels feelings.
I believe that chapter is actually an Oathbringer, but you are incorrect.
Really? Wow. Okay.
Elliot?
I think this is when Moash, who has become Vire, stabs and kills Yezrian with the special dagger thing that sucks his soul into the stone.
Incorrect. Those are the same chapter, by the way, that you both are referring to. this is...
Can I take a second guess? Not for points. Not for points. I'll give
it. Yeah, sure. That. What's your second guess?
Is this the end of part one of Rhythm of War where he does the Bridge Force salute after killing somebody in front of Kaladin?
Roshon in front of Kaladin. And no, that was a good chapter, though. I have... considered that as a chapter name recently, and you might see it on a future question. This one is an interlude, which is why it's called Vire, because most interludes are just titled the name of the person that the point of view is from, is an interlude in Rhythm of War where Vire is in Kolinar doing heavy menial labor so that he doesn't feel pain and just feels numb. And Odium comes to visit him and asks him, how can we kill Kaladin? And Vire says repeatedly, you can't kill Kaladin. You can't kill Kaladin. You have to defeat him in other ways, which is how they come up with the plan to kill Teft. Actually, the original plan is kill his father in front of him. And that's how you break Kaladin instead of kill him. There you go. Elliot, here's your quote ID. Who is speaking? When the heralds next return, what will they find? A people who have forgotten them yet again? A world torn by civil war and squabbling? If we continue as we have, then perhaps we deserve to lose.
This could be a few. This one could definitely be a few. I think you're intentionally trying to mislead us with this one. And there's an obvious-ish character that I'm not going to name because I don't want Paul to guess it, in case I'm wrong. But that this is actually Noadon speaking.
Wow. That is incredible, Elliot. That is correct.
Yeah.
Wow. I thought that neither
one of you... You were trying to trick us, weren't you?
I thought that neither one of you would get this, but one of you would get it on the response. Because then Dalinar responds with, there is honor in loss if that loss brings learning. That one, I think, is a little bit easier in response to what was just said. But for you to pull out Noadon, that quote is in the Way of Kings. Wow, I'm really impressed with that one. Paul, would you have gotten that?
I would not have gotten that. Well done, Elliot.
I know my Noadon sometimes.
We have been following him for quite some time now, so
that's four true.
Years now.
Yeah.
Alrighty. 1-0 to Elliot. Paul, here's your review. What book are they talking about? And what did they rate it? I'm not sure what more I can say about the author and this particular series that I haven't already gushed over in other reviews. I still liked this one on a reread, but to be honest, it wasn't my favorite of the series. Still excellent characters, world building, plot, and writing. I also liked the humor. All of those things Brandon Sanderson nails down firmly. Even though his books are long, they never ever feel long. I love being suspended in his stories. The ride is never a bumpy one. There seemed to be less action in this one, but there was more peeling off layers of the characters. Still a worthy trade, so it worked. I would have liked a little more action, like other books, but this is just me.
It all comes down in my head. Is this person one of those people who like grades harshly, or do they hand out stuff? Because I'm like, they obviously like it, but is it a 4 stars like it? Is it a 3 stars like it? Is it a 5 stars? Yeah, it's Brandon. I love him. 5 stars, you know. That's the wild card for me. I say that's the wild card. I'm also between 2 books. I'm actually going to go with... I'm going to say that this is 4 to 5 stars. For Rhythm of War. I'm going to stick with my gut instinct.
Elliot?
Rhythm of War seems like the book to go with here, although I'm actually tempted to go outside Stormlight. But I think I'm going to stick to Rhythm of War. But I think this is an all-in fan. This is that they're trying to find things to kind of, you know, make it sound not too nice, but the rating I think is a love it. It's a 5 out of 5. Rhythm of War.
Alrighty. This is Rhythm of War. And it is a 4 out of 5.
Oh.
So Paul got both points. Congratulations. It is 2-2 moving into the final trivia question. Elliot, this trivia question is brought to you courtesy of one of our patrons, MD Hawkeye. Thank you for the question. Pom, a wash girl for Marais in Oathbringer, is secretly who?
Come again?
There's an easier version of this question if neither of you get this right the first time.
What was that a name you said at the beginning?
Pom, P-O-M, a wash girl for Marais in Oathbringer, is secretly who?
But isn't Words of Radiance where we get the, like, Marais ghost blood intrigue where there's secret people who aren't who you think they are? I don't know. This is secretly... See, we had... I'm like trying to run down four different trains of thoughts at the same time, and it's not working.
Do you want to let us in on the knowledge, or are you going to hide it from Paul?
Well, yeah, see, that's the thing, is I'm going to feed Paul info, but we'll do it anyway. It's Words of Radiance where there's like the... Oh, wait, Marais's servant is actually the one in charge, assassin lady with the mask thing. That's not Pom, the wash girl. Then there's the whole, oh, wait, Marais has an AVR. He's connected to Six of the Dusk type places. So is this now a reference to somebody from, what is that planet? It's not Threnody, that's the other one. I should know this now. It's not Cell. It's not Threnody.
The planet that Six of the Dusk is from?
Yeah. Or is that the name of the planet?
Is it Pachi? Or is that the name of the island? I think Pachi is the name of the island. Hold on.
I think it is also the name of the island, but I could be wrong. Don't know if I'm allowed to talk. Whoops.
I'll look at
that place. Or... You know what? I'm going to ditch all of that and say that this is a herald. I don't know all of their names. It's a herald we haven't talked about. That's my final half answer.
Okay. The answer to the planet question is First of the Sun.
Okay.
Is the name of the planet. Yep. Paul, your turn.
So that means that he was incorrect? For the record.
Well, he didn't actually answer. He said a herald.
It's a herald that I don't know.
He's passing, I think.
Yeah, but the reason I'm asking that is because there was one herald I was thinking of, but that wasn't my primary guess. So if it is that, then I don't know.
Let me see if I can actually amend my answer super quick to get it in the ballpark of maybe passable. There's a herald with a P name. That, like, the Palinaeum is named after.
Okay. Incorrect.
Okay, thank you.
I was going to say, if it's that, I'd be very surprised.
I think it's Paula is her name.
Okay.
Oh, I did not remember that herald name, so that's neat. Okay. I'm just going to go with what my first gut instinct was and say that this is Shallan when she's infiltrating. Or Vale, maybe, if you want to be technical, it could have been Vale. But I'm going to say Shallan.
Incorrect.
Okay.
Here comes the easier version of this question. Pom, a wash girl from Marais, in an Oathbringer interlude, is secretly which herald?
So I was on the right path with Herald.
I know it, yeah.
Elliot goes first.
Oh, God. See, I had a hard enough time coming up with the one name. I don't know the rest of them.
Yeah, the easier version of this question is actually no easier for Elliot because that was his assumption to start with.
Female heralds. There's the one we think that is Shallan's mother, Shana Ranach or whatever. There's Paula, which I just tried. I don't even know. Oh, there's Ash. We know Ash, but we know who Ash is. So there's like two more female heralds.
There are two more.
I don't know their names. I don't know their names.
Look at your country map on your wall there, and you might see some origin or original stem names of some of them.
Yeah, that's going to be a very long guessing game.
Got nothing?
Nope. I start throwing names at you. Eerie and Thalina, and I don't know which ones are named after heralds.
All right, if you're officially passing, then I will shove it to Paul. What's your guess, sir?
Well, after hearing the banter, it makes me think that the guess I was oh so confident in is not right. I thought this was Ash. But I'm thinking back through the story, and that may not be true, because she's with Talonel most of the time. But I thought this was Ash before the big Avengers Assemble moment.
I need a final answer.
Ash. Is the full name Shalash? Shalash?
Shalash.
Yeah.
Okay. Paul, you are correct. It is
that was Shalash. What? That was unironically about to be my first guess, but I wasn't confident in it.
And here...
That was the one I was thinking of.
Your thought process is good, because the entirety of Oathbringer in the background, what is Shalash trying to do? Paul, you just said it. She's trying to find Talonel.
Yeah.
Where's Talon the whole time?
He's kidnapped, right?
He's kidnapped by Amaram, and then the Ghost Blood steal
him. This is when we learn about that Amaram can like read and knows about the Radiance and stuff like that. Yeah.
So
Moraine, that's why I thought it was Shallan, because that's how we learn about that stuff. Maybe that's later. I'm getting that mixed up. But
so Moraine is hot on the tail of Talonel, and Ash knows it, so she is hanging out with him to try to rescue Talon from Moraine. So yes, you are correct, and Paul gets the point.
Well done.
It's my big comeback.
Alrighty, we will conclude there. It is now 8-7 in Elliot's favor. We will
Six. I think I only have six in the interest of honesty.
Five plus one is not
seven. I will take the other one.
No.
As it was robbed from me by the community.
I don't... I don't know why I said seven, because
I just want everyone listening to know.
I have 8-5 right in front of me.
Just want everyone listening to know you voted for me. We would have been tied 7-7 right now.
That's true.
So you gave that up, but that's fine. That's fine. You know, it'll make the comeback story even sweeter, you know?
True. So you are correct. It is 8-6 in Elliot's favor. We will reconvene next week.
On we go.
Onward and upward.